DC Defenders against the New York Guardians. Like I said, a lot of people thought this was going to be the game of the week. Had 2-1-0 teams, but DC just came out and just put a just ass-whooping on the Guardians. The Guardians only had 137 total net yards, a 384 for the Defenders. The Defenders ran 65 plays to 47 for the Guardians, and the Defenders had 5.9 plays, well, yards per play, excuse me, to 2.9 for the Guardians. Sad thing is, Guardians only had 5 first downs to the DC Defenders, 16. On offense, not really as much to show for the Guardians. It was pathetic showing, really. 10 rushes, 30 net, 9 yards for Tim Cook. 8 of 19 passing from Matt McGloin for 44 yards on 19 attempts. Marquise Williams had 4 for 8 for 51. 11 less attempts, but 8 more yards. Matt McGloin also had 2 interceptions. The leading receiver for the Guardians was, in fact, Mikhail McKay, 3 for 30. Cardell Jones, though, did his usual, 23-37, 276 yards, 2 touchdowns and a pick. Rashard Ross and Tompkins led the team, 4 for 95 for Ross, 6 for 92 for Tompkins, and Eli Rogers, playing on the day of his mother's funeral, had 5 catches, 49 yards. Pumphrey and Presley just split the carries again, 52 yards rushing for Pumphrey and 32 for Presley. This was a sad excuse of a game for the Guardians. Matt McGloin said at halftime if what they should change, he said the entire game plan. He threw everybody on the bus, didn't take any blame for his poor play for himself. He didn't say, hey, you know what, it's on me, like Landry Jones did against LA. He even said that he didn't play well. He took initiative to go, you know what, this is on me, I'm the leader of this team. Matt McGloin did not do that. I don't know how he even still is on the team at this point. He told Luis Perez later on the sideline, this is the worst game I've ever been a part of. I don't understand. There's a quarterback controversy probably brewing here. If you're the Guardians coach, if you're Gil Brown, you gotta look at this and go, okay, this would be the leader of my team, and he's not taking any initiative to take the blame. Like, he's not trying to be a leader or anything at this point. He's throwing everybody under the bus, throwing his team under the bus. It's the second weekend. Y'all still trying to get used to each other, and you want to throw your entire team under the bus like that. How, as other Guardians players, if you're on the Guardians team, how do you even look at him in the locker room? How do you look at him at practice when he's trying to stand there and go, you know what, I'm the leader of this team, and he threw y'all under the bus? There's got to be some ill will there. The question is, the team going to give up on him? And they don't get things, you know, things don't get any easier for them. He's got to go into St. Louis in a dome that's going to be rocking indoors. St. Louis line would have blown him out as well, and then we're going to have a real problem with our hands up in New York. The Guardians, I think, might be pretenders. They beat the Vipers in week 1. I think a lot of teams are going to beat the Vipers, and that is the problem. Like we said last week, how good is New York defense, or how bad was Tampa's offense? Granted, one of these touchdowns was a pick 6, and New York Guardians, their defense actually played pretty well, all things considered. But when your offense don't do nothing and gives the other guy the short field, you ain't got no choice but to have your backs against the wall and give up points. I mean, when the team's starting, you know, when your quarterback can't complete a pass without depending on it, and he gives up interceptions at your end of the field, I mean, they have no choice but to give up points a lot of those times. So they did hold DC, I think, to like two or three field goals. That New York defense is all right, but looking at it right now, they're in trouble, especially if they don't get the quarterback under control. He said this kind of stuff happens. This is what he pretty much said. This is what y'all wanted next to fail. Y'all wanted to know what goes on, you know, with these players. This is what it is. I get frustrated. People get frustrated with the coaches. It is what it is. But just throw everybody on the bus and not take take at least some of the blame. That is the issue with this. Let's see what the Defenders said about their win. Piff Hamilton, we always have a lot to play for, but one of the guys that always put it on the line for his teammates is Eli Rogers. It was a tough week for not just Eli, but for myself and the rest of our locker room and coaching staff. Just thought of playing a game and making the ultimate sacrifice and missing out on his mother's funeral. Even after the game, it warmed me to see Eli enjoying the victory with his teammates. It's just a testament of his character. Eli Roger said his mom would want him to play, and he did just that. Anthony Johnson, who just got traded to the team, he got traded on Friday, hit a plane late Friday night, Saturday morning, woke up at like 7 o'clock and started studying plays. He actually had a sack and a half, I think. This is Anthony Johnson talking about his prep after flying into his debut for his new club. Go to sleep, drink a gallon of water, wake up ready to roll. Coach Hamilton asked me last night if I was ready to play. I said, yes, sir, and I think you saw that I was ready to play. Stat of the game. Total yards, 384 to 137, 50% on third down, to 9% for the Guardians, one turnover, to three turnovers. It says New York struggled to generate much potential with its offensive plays, while D.C. consistently stressed the Guardians' defense with its deep receiving core. While dominating the pace, the defenders easily moved the chains for most of the contest while converting third down. Guardians peak performers, Bunma Rotimi, once again did his best to limit D.C., again hovering atop New York's leaderboard with seven combined tackles and a QB hit while the offense was spinning its gears. A second star is hard to find, but linebacker DeJuan Hines' interception off a tip pass proved to be one of the only bright spots and provided them with arguably the best opportunity to turn things around. Still couldn't score, though. Defenders, Tazeal Rogers played week two while his mother's funeral was happening with eight targets and five catches. The former NFL receiver once again proved to be a safety valve for Cardale Jones. This isn't to dismiss the other downfield weapons like Rashard Ross. Once again displayed his deep play danger with 95 yards, nearly matching him with 92 yards of DeAndre Tompkins, who missed week one but also found plenty of holes in New York secondary on a six catch, 92 yard day on nine targets while catching the first score of the game. Kevin Gilbert said, we started off slow on both sides of the ball. I thought our defense picked it up and played well. Offensively, it seemed like every time we started to get something going, we shot ourselves in the foot. Damian Mama, who moved from guard to center week two, says, unlike what his quarterback said, we had a good game plan. We just didn't execute, and that's on me. As the center, I had to recognize things and point them out. We just didn't execute the game plan. So next week, Guardians visit St. Louis on Sunday at 3 o'clock, and Defenders play away for the first time against the Wildcats. Again, I know I talked a lot about McGloin and him throwing his teammates on the bus, but DC is just so good, and they got better with Anthony Johnson. It's just sad to see that, you know, you have one side, you got everybody playing for Eli Rogers. You know, they know what happened. The coaching staff, they pretty much a family over there in the D.C. side. They huddled around him, said, you know what, we're going to win this. We're glad Eli's here. Like Hamilton said, you know, it's been a tough week, but here he is making the ultimate sacrifice for us. And you have somebody like McGloin on the Guardian side saying, you know what, this is a horrible game plan. This ain't on me. This is on everybody else. This is the worst game I've ever been a part of, the worst game plan I've been a part of. Two totally different teams going in opposite directions. D.C. was clearly the better team, not just by the score, but by the personnel and the coaching staff. Pep Hamilton is going to be a head coach in the NFL one day soon if he keeps this up. DC's going to roll over people. Like I said before, they're going to blow out a lot of people, and this might be the first of big blowouts. Expect the same in L.A., I think, this week. We'll talk about that on Friday's show. But DC is legit the team to beat in the East. Next up was a very rainy, sloppy game, but it was exciting because it was in front of almost 30,000 people. The Tampa Bay Vipers against Seattle Dragons. Tampa Bay has still yet to score an offensive touchdown. Dragons kind of found their kind of rhythm. They run the ball. They ran the ball 31 times with three different running backs, that three-headed monster, Williams, Farrell, and Gardner. Brandon Silver's only had 91 yards passing, and a lot of that was like a 75-yard catch by Kenny Reynolds for a touchdown. The answer in Tampa is not Cornelius or Clinton Flowers. Both of them had pedestrian numbers. Cornelius had six completions on 27 attempts, 154 yards, no touchdowns, two picks. Quentin Flowers had 18 yards passing with one interception, which one was returned for a touchdown. Seattle wins 17-9. Like I said, very sloppy game on both sides. It was raining. Tampa Bay still, like I said, yet to score an offensive touchdown. They had a defensive touchdown in this game, and then added a field goal, and that was it. Seattle did enough at the end with a pick six and Keenan Reynolds' touchdown to hold on to win in front of
a crap load of crazy fans, almost 30,000 people. Seattle knows how to turn out for its teams. Love the game. I thought if you like defensive football, this is a very good game. Tampa Bay still ain't very good. but Seattle is sneaky. Seattle's a very interesting team in the West, where they run the ball and play decent defense. Like I said, I could see them play Houston in a couple weeks live, and Houston cannot wait to fly out there for that game. Seattle's a very sneaky team. The question is, though, do they have enough at quarterback? Brandon Silver's not been the greatest in the world. But unlike other teams, going 17 for 18 didn't make him lose his job. Nobody else came in. He was the only one that threw a pass for Seattle, so that's kind of interesting. You know, they didn't bench him like they tried to do Aaron Murray in Seattle, in Tampa. I don't know why they tried to switch out Cornelius and Flowers. Neither one of the guys could really get momentum when you keep switching them in and out. We talked about that with Aaron Murray and Quentin Flowers before at the beginning of the season. It looked like Tampa's offense is just the worst offense in the league. Like I said, they've yet to score a touchdown. To put that in perspective, they have scored zero offensive touchdowns. Phillip Walker has scored seven, just as many as the D.C. Defenders has. Again, Phillip Walker is very good at football. He has just as many touchdowns or more than the rest of the league's teams. So that's crazy. And kind of shows you how sad Tampa Bay is. I've been preaching all along, I think there's going to be the worst team in the league, and it's looking more and more like I'm right. Let's look at some of the team stats. Once again, it's another game where the Vipers led the other team in plays and total net yards. Vipers had 289 yards on 70 plays, while the Dragons only had 199 on 51. They even beat them in yards per play, 4.1 yards for the Vipers, 3.9 for the Dragons. Even had more first downs, 19 for the Vipers and 14 for Dragons. Now, to me, the long bright spot for the Vipers is actually their running backs. Davion Smith had 11 carries, 46 yards, and you had Jaquez Patrick, 14 carries for 73 yards. I think Patrick even added a couple catches, two catches for 1 yard. But one catch for 18 yards, and Davion Smith had one catch for 12. The running back, I think they just need to run the ball more. Run with Clinton Flowers, run with Patrick, run with Davion Smith. I don't think Mark Trestman's offense, his genius, is translating to the XFL. I think a lot of people just now realizing that this ain't the CFL. This ain't his NFL team with the Bears. The team he's put together is just not very good. I've been saying that all along, and nobody wanted to listen. Even Vegas had them as the favorites to win the championship for reasons we'll never know. And now here they are, 0-2. They play the Roughnecks at home this week. Then they play DC at home the next week. Their home fans' first two games they're going to see ever in franchise history is going to be massacres. They're going to start out 0-4. This team has been playing bad on the road the last 2 weeks. How many people do you really think is going to be in Tampa Bay Saturday afternoon to watch them just get manhandled by Houston? Not many, probably. This is the worst team in the league, and I've been preaching it all along. So let's see what the Dragons said about the win. Jim Zorn said, "I couldn't be more excited for our players because most of our players, almost all of them, have never experienced the support of the stadium could give them, and that was kind of exciting for them." Seattle fans came in and showed out. They showed up, showed out. 30,000 people just rocked it. Seattle's got the best fan base so far in the XFL until this Sunday when St. Louis gets unleashed finally. I think they saw how the fans created the atmosphere, and in that creation they felt at home as well. Not out of place at all. I hope we can continue to improve. We still have a lot of work, and they know it, but they were resilient today, and we ended up being fortunate to win the game. Brandon Silver says, "Quarterback is the hardest position to play. It's not easy going out there. You just got to fight through it. I didn't play good at all in the first half, and I knew it. Didn't hit throws I usually make. That first big ball added a lot to my confidence." Side of the game, 3 turnovers from the Vipers, 1 for the Dragons. Again, turnovers is killing this team. It ain't just an Aaron Murray problem. It's a Cornelius and Flowers problem. They need to go pick up a quarterback off Team 9, I think. They need to get a free agent in. They got to try something. Here's an idea. Trade for Connor Cook. Trade for Luis Perez. Hell, trade for Matt McGloin, since it looks like him and Gilbert might be having a fallout. Do something about it before it's too late. If you start at 0-4 in a 10-win game season, you gotta go 6-0 the rest of the way to even have a chance to playoffs. If they start out 0-4, they are done already. And I'm gonna go and tell you now, they're gonna start out 0-4. They're done already. The placement of active Aaron Murray, it says Tampa Bay quarterbacks Taylor Cornelius and Quentin Flowers had trouble maintaining possession, and Cornelius threw a pick on the final play of the game. That's one thing about this. It was 17-9. They had a touchdown by Dan Williams called back at the end of the game. By offense pass interference, they had another shot at it, did not get it. Ball game. Intercepted. What a shock. A Tampa Bay quarterback threw an interception. Any Tampa Bay quarterback in any league, those interceptions look like. Pick performances by the Vipers, like I said, Jaquizz Patrick and Devion Smith proved more useful in this tight game than their week one blowout loss. Tampa Bay won the battle in time of possession, the pace with 32 runs and had an especially churning drive to close out the game. Yeah, they ran down the clock to the very end, had a chance to win it, did not get it. Three games of the weekend came down to like the last possession. It was very good football. Sloppy football in these two games, this game, the next game. But it was fun to watch. McFadden had the highlight with his pick six, but safety was serious. Branch had 12 tackles with a sack. His day was marred, however, with a key unnecessary roughness penalty that extended Seattle's final scoring drive. For the Dragons, Reynolds broke loose in the second half, but the run game played a lower key role in sustaining Dragons' drives. That's net 97 yards on the ground in the opener. Seattle's backfield topped 100 with distribution again, with Trey Williams and Kenneth Farrow each contributing 45 yards. Linebacker Steven Johnson racked up another busy week, collecting 9 tackles after an 8-tackle week one. He'll likely rank among the leaders in that category by weekend's completion. We'll talk about the Vipers' defeat. Mark Chesman said, as far as the Vipers go, I got a locker room full of guys who can't wait to get home and play at Raymond James Stadium this week. I can tell you that. I'm certainly disappointed. Really proud of our defense, though. They played hard, they tackled, and they did everything we could. Offensively, we just haven't found ourselves. We haven't had the play at quarterback that we need, and we're still working through that, and we need to find a way to score. You got a team like the Vipers this week playing Houston. We're going to talk about this again Friday. Vipers can't score offensive touchdown, and then you have Houston scoring all the offensive touchdowns. It's going to get ugly quick. It's going to be very, very ugly this weekend. Quentin Flowers said, we have to play better ball on offense. The defense went out and played great. They played great at the end of the day, but we kept getting in the red zone. We have to score. We have to find a way to score. The offense, we have to come together. We have to do better. We have to find a way to score. Like I said, sloppy game, but Seattle earned it. We talked about it. I know I talked about it on the previous show. Seattle's fans showing out with that many people was the difference. Give it up for Seattle. They're a sneaky good team. But like the Guardians, how much of it is they're a good team, or at least a decent team, and how much of it is Tampa just the worst team in the league? And finally, the last game to talk about this week is the Dallas Renegades against the Wildcats. It was the return of Josh Johnson, or the debut of Josh Johnson, and the debut of Landry Jones. Dallas wins this 25-18. Very good game. Very sloppy first half. It looked like LA was actually going to pull this out and just shock everybody in Dallas and be 0-2. But Kevin Artis Payne was a one-man wrecking crew. 14 attempts for 99 yards and 2 touchdowns. He is my exceptional player of the week. He had over 80 yards in the fourth quarter running. He didn't do anything until the time was right. But his 2 touchdowns was the difference maker in this game as they win 25-18. Landry Jones was 28 for 40 passing, 1 touchdown and 2 picks. Josh Johnson, on the other hand, 18 of 34, 196 yards and 2 touchdowns. Nelson Spruce, once again, multiple touchdowns. 6 catches, 89 yards, 2 touchdowns. He is the best wide receiver in this league. Donald Parham, however, led Dallas. 5 catches, 76 yards, and a touchdown. Let's look at the team stats. In this one, Renegades had 440 total yards, 251 for the Wildcats. Offensive play, 66-35 for the Renegades, and 6.7 yards per play, the 4.6. Now, the thing that aggravated me about this game the most is Winston Moss. Winston Moss fired his all defense coordinator, as we know. He traded his team captain on defense. And what does he do during the game? He's sitting on the bench by himself, arms propped up, just chilling with the offense on the field. You are still the head coach, even though you're defensive coordinator. Why are you chilling on the bench with your arms on it like you just at home sitting on the couch? If I was an LA fan, I'd be pissed off. Your offense is still on the field. I know Norm Chow's offensive coordinator and you're a defensive guy, but you're still the head coach. Your offense needs to hear from you. He's just sitting there chilling, interviewing on ABC. He's just sitting there, sunglasses on, just popped up like he's just at home. He's like, oh, I don't care about the offense being on the field. He was sitting there, and I heard him because we can hear the coaches. He's sitting there talking about defense while the offense is on the field. You're still in this game. It's 3-3 at halftime. I mean, what was you doing? What was you doing just chilling there talking about defense when your offense is on the field? Especially when you have a guy like Josh Johnson. This is his first game in the league. He's supposed to be your guy. He's probably like, hey, you know, I was Coach Moss. Would talk to me. And now LA's 0-2. And they got DC coming to town. I mean, you can kind of go ahead and tell what's going to happen. This week three is going to be crazy. Just the games on week three just look like they're going to be just blowouts, a lot of them. Well, again, though, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about that in a minute. So, despite losing the turnover battle 32, Dallas broke through on the ground after the break. Lindsey Jones for three for 305 yards in his return. And Kevin Arnold Fain finished with 131 scrimmage yards and 2 second-half scores. The Wildcats welcome back their own quarterback, Josh Johnson, who connected twice for touchdowns with Nelson Spruce, who may finish week two as the league leader with 192 receiving yards across the two contests. Yeah, Nelson Spruce and Cam Phillips really surprised me in this game. Two of the best wide receivers, or surprised me this week. That's two of the best wide receivers in this league. All these big name receivers, you got Cam Phillips and Nelson Spruce leading the way. Like I said, Kevin Rashard Payne was my exceptional player of the week. He turned out a pair of scores from 21 and 17 yards out in the fourth quarter. And he was turning the corner. Like, he looked young and spry. I know last week he got bottled up, but some of that is St. Louis defense being really good. But he came out and it was 9-6 LA with 8 minutes left. And he came out and just scored 2 touchdowns. Next thing you know, bam, it's 19-9. And then it was ended up being 25-18 to be in the final after LA, who became, let's not show LA short, LA became the first team to get a 3-point conversion. However, they didn't try it from the 10. It was a penalty, and they tried it from the 5 and got it. But LA did get the first conversion, brought it from 19-9 to 19-18. And then with a minute left, Cameron Arsh Payne had a brilliant run to end up winning the game 25-18 for Dallas. Renegades talk about the win. How Mummy said they were playing too high. As long as they did that, we knew that we could throw the ball. And a lot of the time, they had 5 in the box, which allowed us to run the ball. Joshua Crockett said, just make a play. I trust Landry fully. It's his first day back, something we've been working on since OTAs. He had a 39-yard catch from Landry Jones. For him to have that trust in me to go make a play to bring energy to this team and then come out with a great team victory, you know, it wasn't pretty in the beginning, but we found a way as a team at the end of the day, and that's all you can ask for. Stat of the game, 444 total yards for Dallas, 251 for L.A., rushing yards, 154 for Dallas, 57 for L.A., total domination by Dallas on the ground. Arch Payne found plenty of room to work late and allowed Dallas to control the pace after the break. The Renegades rounded up with 6.4 average yards per carry. L.A. only had 3.2. Do the math. Dallas doubled up L.A. in yards per carry. Peak performances, like I said, Artis Payne took over once Renegade started to establish the run, winding up with a ludicrous 7.1 yards per carry. The former NFL carries 2 scoring cutbacks to the left to convince Dallas to lean on the ground game more strongly in the near future. After a slow first half and 2 interceptions plagued him in the third quarter, Jones found another level with a deep ball in the second half, finishing with 305 passing yards and a 70% completion rate and a solid 7.6 yards per attempt. Highlights include a connection with Joshua Crockett for 39 yards and a red zone score to the athletic tight end Donald Parham, who stood out on his own with 5 catches and 76 yards on 11 targets. Donald Parham's going to be a big part of this offense moving forward. You don't know who the number one wide receiver is in Dallas. It's not Jazz Ferguson. It's not Jeff Burdette. It's Donald Parham. Wildcats. Spruce's 6 catch, 9 target
89-yard and two-score day was the highlight of LA's effort that came up just short. He quickly developed into one of the most reliable wideouts in the XFL. Following his 11-catch, 15-target week one, this time he aided in Josh Johnson's return following a week one absence. Linebacker Will Smith registered one of LA's two picks, defended another pass, and collected six total tackles, including two solo. Woods Moss said, "We're making progress. We got better today. The guys have to stay the course. They have to take care of their bodies. They have to do the little things. The little things get you beat. The turnovers, the penalties, the good teams that win games do not beat themselves." Nelson Spruce said, "As an offense, we're moving the ball. We didn't get points on the board when we had the opportunity, which was the difference in the game. We'll look at the tape and fix what we got to fix." Dallas visits Seattle in my game of the week. We'll talk about that Friday. What a game that's going to be. Saturday at 5 o'clock. And then the Wildcats stay at home, welcoming the Defenders Sunday at 6 o'clock in the last game of the weekend. Now, then the episode, like we're going to do every Tuesday, we're going to talk rankings. Again, this is not... Well, first off, I'm going to say I went 4-0 in my picks last week. That puts me 7-1 on the year, just to toot my own horn, toot. My one loss was picking LA to beat Houston, which if I knew Josh Johnson wasn't going to play, I'd be 8-0. But hey, 7-1, not bad. Like I said, I picked it right on XFL Newsroom's season preview or week one preview. But hey, I'll take it. 7-1's not bad. So these rankings are college-style rankings, not power rankings. You know, the losing teams come at the bottom, winning teams come at the top. So here we go. Number 8, Tampa Bay Vipers. I've been preaching all offseason that this team is weird. There's no stars on this team, and I didn't know what Chessman was doing by picking Trisdale first. Think about all the talent he could have had. He could have had somebody like Nelson Spruce. He could have had somebody like Cameron Artis Payne. You know, nothing against the Tampa Bay players, but I just don't think Chessman's a good person to be a GM picking the players, picking his groceries, if you will. And I don't see them winning for a while. They're number 8. Number 7 is LA, but they are trending up. LA is a I don't want to say good team, but they had the pieces in place like Spruce, like Johnson. Elijah Hood has some fumbling problems, but they're number 7 for now. If they win, though, they can somehow beat DC. They'll move up my rankings a good bit, unless they can. But LA's a solid 7, but they are better than Tampa. When those two teams play each other, it's going to be weird. It's going to be a crazy game. Number 6 is New York. New York worries me that they're going to implode like LA did. They're going to start getting rid of players. Matt McGloin throwing his guys around the bus, like I talked about for a while earlier, was the absolute worst thing of the weekend, I think. Even worse than that missed call in the St. Louis game. You just can't do that in a new league where your teammates trust you. These guys are just now starting to gel. It's week 2, and then any camaraderie that you built over minicamp and training camp is gone. Watch out. There might be a quarterback controversy. This might have been brewing for a while. That's why they traded for Luis Perez. Keep an eye on New York. They're number 6. Number 5 is Seattle Dragons. Seattle is getting better. I think they're a sneaky good team, like I've been saying. But quarterback play, like most teams, is the question. Is Brandon Silvers good enough? He's not been that great. He was all right week 1. Week 2 was bad. When you get in the heart of the schedule, like this coming up week when they play Dallas, can Brandon Silvers make that throw? Can he go throw for throw with Landry Jones? He can go throw for throw. He actually went throw for throw with Cardale. But, I mean, he kind of sunk to the Vipers' level. It makes you wonder if he can play up the competition. We'll see if he can play up to Landry Jones this Saturday at 5. Number 4 is Dallas. Their offense is not clicking like I thought it would. Jazz Ferguson's hurt. Parham was awesome. Kennard's Payne's getting there. Lance Dunbar, which I didn't talk about him earlier, gets the ball out of the backfield. He had a pretty good game as well. They have the pieces there, but they just haven't put it together yet. Landry Jones might have some rust. I mean, that's his first game in 700 days. Show me what y'all got this week against Seattle. Move up the number 2 in the West. And then next, not this week, but next week, they play Houston. That's going to be the real test. We'll see what kind of team Dallas is. They have to beat Seattle this week, though. My problem is, and we'll talk about it Friday, are they looking past Houston Look past Seattle to Houston. If they do that, Seattle's going to beat them at home in front of 30,000 people again. Leonard Jones in that crowd. Yeah, like I said, he hadn't played a lot. We'll see how he does when it's loud up in Century League for my game of the week. Number three, St. Louis Battlehawks. I know they lost, but oh boy, they went toe-to-toe with one of the best teams in the league. They could have won that game. Like I said, that blown call by the refs sent them back a little bit. But Jordan Tamu is, to me, the third-best quarterback in the league right now behind Walker and Cardell, and then there's him. Jordan Tamu, he's 22. He's got plenty of room to grow. Hopefully we see him grow in the XFL, and hopefully he don't get picked up by an NFL team. 22, he's still a rookie, but he's out there leading the team. St. Louis is in good hands with that young man. And his wide receiver core, very good wide receiver core. Matt Jones and Christine Michael is a good 1-2 punch at running back. Seattle is a very, very good team, and their defense is no joke either. Put him at number three. Number two, Houston Roughnecks. I know what you're thinking. There's no one for you last week. Yes, but they had a very tougher game this week. Again, they get the Vipers this week, so I don't see them having any problems with them. But they went out there. They took care of business against St. Louis, had some stuff go their way. Even when Phillip Walker wasn't throwing for a bunch of chunk yards like he did week one, he did just enough to give them the win. Him and Cam Phillips is going to be a great combination out there. But they're my number two team because number one is the D.C. Defenders. They stacked up. They're 2-0. They stacked up with Anthony Johnson. They blew out the New York Guardians 27-0. That was enough to impress me to move them up against Houston, above Houston. Like I said, this is more like college rankings, not power rankings. D.C. is number one just based on just destroying the Guardians 27-0 and then beating the week before 31-19 against Seattle. If Houston blew out a very good St. Louis team, they'd been number one. But you can't look past the fact that they added even more firepower in that DC team and blew out the Guardians 27-0. That puts DC at my number one. To go with the rankings again, number eight, Tampa Bay Vipers. Number seven, LA Wildcats. Number six, New York Guardians. Number five, the Seattle Dragons. Four is the Dallas Renegades. Three is the St. Louis Battlehawks. Two is the Houston Roughnecks. And number one, the DC Defenders. As I was saying before, there's DC, there's Houston, and there's everybody else. Thank you for joining me on this episode. What a week two it was. This Thursday, I'll record for Friday, week three preview. It's already week three. Game of the week, Dallas against Seattle. We got Tampa and Houston going at it. We have St. Louis hosting the Guardians from the first game in the Dome. And then to wrap it up, we have DC against LA. It's going to be a very interesting preview episode. Can't wait to talk to you about week three preview and picks. Follow me at XFL Podcast on Twitter. And on Facebook, check me out on XFL Newsroom. Check out all of our wonderful podcasts on there. Some great, great podcasts. Fantasy podcasts. We got Unhinged. We got Guardians. We got the Vipers fans covered. We got the Wild Talk with the Wildcats covered. We got This Week in the XFL with XFL Newsroom and the Ref. Great stuff. Check me out on Love Sport Radio every Saturday morning over in the UK, which is like 2 o'clock in the morning here in the States. But, you know, who's keeping track? I am their new XFL analysis. We're going to be talking about week two and three this coming up week. Thank you and good night. Cannot wait to see what we got in store for week three in the XFL.
This is the XFL Podcast. Presented by XFL2K.com. With your host, Tron Hawkins.
Welcome to This is the XFL Podcast. I'm your host, Tron Hawkins. Week two, what a week it was. I think it was a lot better than week one, actually. We had three really exciting games coming down to the last play and or last few plays. And then we had whatever DC versus New York was. But it was a great week. Let's get right into it. The game of the week was the Houston Roughnecks at the St. Louis Battlehawks. I said all week, I think this was going to be the game of the week, not D.C. versus New York. And what a barn burner it was. It was the Houston Roughnecks winning 28-24. Battlehawks, though, kind of got screwed over a little bit, I like to think. There was a play late in the game. St. Louis was only down 3 points. Houston came off sides. Jordan Tamu thought he had a free play. He chunks it up because he thought it was a free play. It gets intercepted. And then the next thing you know, bam, Houston's up by 10. And they end up winning by four. Probably the most controversial plays so far in the XFL. I get it, it's going to happen. Referees are human, but there's going to be some way to fix that because you're trying to not be like the NFL. You're trying not to let the referees decide the game. And I'm not saying Houston wouldn't have won the game anyway because I like to think they are the better team. We'll get to the rankings later, but I'm not saying that they wouldn't want to win anyway. But St. Louis surprised me by how competitive they was. I was worried that the Roughnecks was just going to blow them out. St. Louis is probably the second best team in the East. I mean, there's the Tampa Bay Vipers, who's just not good like we always thought. There's New York, who's falling apart, which I want to talk about here in a few minutes. And then there's St. Louis. St. Louis is the second best team in the East. The question is, can they beat D.C.? I'm not so sure about it. Right now, there's the Roughnecks, there's D.C., and then there's everybody else. But what a game. Like I said, if you just look past the controversial call, it was a fantastic game, a classic, probably the best game so far out of the first 2 weeks. This is going to be, for real, a top 10 game of the year kind of game. So let's talk about it. So total net yards and plays, very impressive. Roughnecks ran 83 plays. I'm sorry, the Battlehawks ran 83 plays to 49 of the Roughnecks. The Battlehawks had 309 total yards to 238 for the Roughnecks. Total domination, really, for the Battlehawks. They run the ball. We know what they're going to do. They're going to run the ball and play good defense. That's what they did. They ran it. They controlled the clock. They controlled the game. Roughnecks defense had to be tired. So let's look at the stats. Matt Jones led the team again with 44 yards for the Battlehawks. Jordan Tommy looked impressive. 30-37, 284 yards, 3 touchdowns, 2 picks. He also had a rushing touchdown. He carried the ball 8 times for 32 yards for a touchdown. LaDainian Washington had 6 catches for 77 yards and a touchdown. One of the best performances so far this year was Pearson Ayo. He had 9 catches for 50 yards and a touchdown, but 9 catches led the week. He had Matt Jones with an amazing catch, amazing play. He caught the ball and ran it in, bulldozed his way in. He had 1 catch for 25 yards and a touchdown. Phillip Walker did his usual. He had 20 of 31 for 170 yards, but 3 touchdowns. All 3 touchdowns came to Cam Phillips. He had 10 targets, 8 catches, 63 yards, and 3. Yes, count them, 3 touchdowns. Total domination on that side of the ball. Cam Phillips is the best wide receiver for Houston. People thought it was going to be Sammy Coates. Some people thought it would be Lewis. No, it's Cam Phillips. He is a stud. Butler came back down the earth. He only had 7 carries for 28 yards, and he only had 2 catches for -3. So he kind of came back down to where I think a lot of people thought he would be. Fantastic game, though. They ran the ball, 42 times. They ran the ball 42 times. That's almost half their play. They're the most balanced team in this league. St. Louis is a contender in the East. Now, I get it, like I've been saying. It's D.C., it's Houston, anybody else. But two other teams got to make the playoffs. And right now, it looks like it's going to be St. Louis, D.C. in the East. And they came really close to beating the Roughnecks in an upset. I mean, they was 9-point underdogs against Dallas, covered that and beat them. They was, I think, 7 or 8-point underdogs here, covered that, almost beat the Roughnecks. Like I said, I don't think the interception changed the game. Battlehawks had the momentum going there. They was only down 3. They was coming back. They wouldn't stay down. That's the thing. They would not die. This is the most resilient team in the XFL. Cannot wait to see the Dome rocking this weekend against the New York Guardians. Battlehawks are legit. So let's look at the Roughnecks talked about the win. Phillip Walker said they're both very hard workers, and they study the film. Oh, this is what Jim Jones said about P.J. Walker and Cam Phillips. They're both very hard workers, and they study the film. They buy into what we are doing. Those two guys made some plays, and that's what you have to do. Players make plays, and P.J. did a great job moving around and making things happen. He did a sidearm touchdown to Cam Phillips that was absolutely amazing. He did the Patrick Mahomes, I'm going to throw it around you, sidearm to kind of play. Absolutely just amazing. Cam Phillips said that just comes from practice, from taking the practice rep seriously, understanding that come game day that we're going to need to have that connection, just talking through everything, watching film, seeing the tendencies of the defenses. The stat of the game, though, is 2 turnovers by the Battlehawks. No turnovers again for Houston. I think they only had 1 last week. It says St. Louis dominated most categories, but they gave the game away, notably on the fourth quarter pick by Houston cornerback Jeremiah Johnson. That is the one where it was offsides. him and they didn't get caught. Yeah, the guy clearly jumped off sides. Tommy said hut to catch him. Just chunks it up. Like, you know what? I'm going to go for a big play since it's a free play. And then when he got intercepted, he was livid, saying, where was the flag? Where was the flag at? And those two turnovers did him in. Jordan Tamu did as much as he could, but the problem was those two interceptions he had. He kept them in the game, but he also took them out of with that two picks. Peak performances. This is going toe-to-toe with MVP candidate Walker. Tamu averaged a solid 7.7 yards per play, or per pass attempt, for the second straight game, showing his embrace of the offensive coordinator Chuck Long's air raid system. The slinger got a boost from two of the wideouts. Washington, 6 catches, 8 targets, 77 yards. And Pearsonale, 9 catches, 11 targets, 50 yards. As Tamu averaged 7.7 yards per pass play, the receivers slash use in secondary during St. Louis's second half rally, reminding the league that the Battlehawks aren't merely a run-first squad. Walker failed to reach 200 aerial yards, but Phillips made the most of his work count, catching 8 of 10 targets for 63 yards and making three end zone trips. Those goal line crossings gave him 4 in the season after he planned 1 in the season open victory. The 24-year-old led Houston receiving options and looks for the second straight week. Don't forget the Roughnecks defense, DeMarcus Gates, Cody Brown, and Benquitez Brown, and quarterback Ajin Harris. They all just... That defense, Houston's got a bend-not-break defense. That might not be the best defense in the league, but they make sure that they get the ball back for Walker. Battlehawk discussed the defeat. Coach Hayes said, the things that kill you, too, are the penalties. We had 8 penalties for 61 yards, and they had 3 for 15. The play that probably broke our back was the interception and return. That was the first interception he had. Damian Washington said, I like where our team is at. Everybody fought. Nobody gave up. I like where this team is at. It's all about the team. Come this week, Houston goes to Tampa, which is a weird game, and St. Louis opens up the dome against the Guardians. This could be a rematch in the championship game. I'm being legit. I like the Battlehawks. I like what they're doing. They gave it everything they got. I would love to see a rematch of this game in Houston again for the championship game. They had to get past D.C., which we're going to talk about here in just a second. Keep your eye on St. Louis, and I wouldn't be surprised if they are the 2 seed in the East. I'll be right back to talk about whatever the Defenders versus Guardian was. We're going to talk about Matt McGloin and his little hissy fit here in just a second.